Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Welcome along to Wednesday Night Rugby. It's been an incredibly eventful week in the papers and in terms of squad selection, ahead obviously of the Wales game, but mainly ahead of the impending World Cup. And I'm delighted to say Brian O'Driscoll is with me in studio tonight. And Brian, we've so many talking points here. I want to give you the opportunity just to give a general, I suppose, appraisal of the squad that Joe Schmidt has gone for after a sort of a ropey, I suppose, pre-season going into the World Cup. Some very, very controversial selections. Yeah. But overall, how has he done?
I think, first of all, starting a positive, I think it's an exciting squad. I think we certainly felt in the lead-up to it that there were going to be some shock omissions because of the quality of this squad, and I think we haven't been left disappointed in that regard. I think the balance looks very good across the board. I'm a little bit surprised that they went 17-14 rather than 18-13, but you know, they've loaded. They brought both Larmour and Conway, which, you know, maybe I wasn't expecting. I thought it might be one or other. But on the balance, I think it's pretty good. I think there looks like there's a bit of horses for courses. You know, obviously, we don't even necessarily know if we're going to see the same team for the first two games, but then you know that, you know, provided those results go the right way, you're going to see wholesale changes. I think you'll see even a different team from the one against Russia versus the one against Samoa the last pool stage. And I think that's why, now looking at it and having had a couple of days to digest all the information and, you know, hear sound bites from what's going on in the camp and why people were omitted, so some of the decisions are a bit more palatable. That said, I'm still surprised, and I'm sure lots of people are still reeling from the likes of Devon Toner not being included instead of John Klein being omitted because of him. Klein is someone that obviously brings a bit more ballast to any pack that he plays in, but I have to say I remain a little bit unconvinced, not just by his two international performances, and one of them being in Twickenham, where he was definitely outplayed by two world-class second rows. But, you know, in Munster games and some of the big games, I wouldn't be so cruel as to say he's gone missing, but he certainly has been not front and centre as you would hope from, you know, one of your enforcer second rows, which I think he's being selected on. So that was a tough selection, you know, obviously, for the likes of Devon to take, the most capped player under Joe Schmidt.
Well, if you go back to the New Zealand game in November, both he and Marmion are in that team. Now neither goes to the World Cup. What has changed?
And Marmion's the other one. And what's changed? I think there's two different things there. I think what's changed with Devon Toner is he got injured at the end of last season and he was slow to recover. And, you know, I heard something today that there were whispers a month ago that Dev was going to be in trouble because he was finding it difficult to play catch up. And that's what...
Did you believe them at the time, kind of?
Sorry, I didn't hear that. I had heard from this individual that they had heard a month ago that he was behind. So, listen, you don't know what's going on in camp. We see games. Well, that's all we're seeing. We don't see anything in training. And Joe puts so much focus into that you know, such credence into how important it is to train well to then be able to deliver that on a Saturday. And if you're not able to do that, or if you're lumbering, or if you're struggling, and
there's a lot of logic to that.
Absolutely. And let's be honest, you know, Devon is probably not the most athletic second rows comparatively to James Ryan and Ian Henderson. He's not that. So if he's a yard off the pace, you know, you could understand why, you know, he's not as effective, or maybe he's not getting to rucks at the same speed as other guys. And all those things are taken into effect. And we're just treating the line out as one aspect. I think something that hasn't been talked an awful lot about is his ability at kickoffs. He's phenomenal in the air. His accuracy of reclaiming kickoffs, nothing better than you know, scoring points and then taking the next kickoff and relieving pressure. It's a huge asset to have, and he's been someone that's really mastered that in the last number of years. So you're missing the line-out aspect of being able to go to one of the tallest players in international rugby, but you're also missing that, and a wealth of experience as well. He's been in lots of big moments in the last 10 years. You know, he's four Champions Cups. He, you know, was in that All Black team twice.
But is it all the more surprising?
He's won down in Australia. He's done all the things that Joe Schmidt has done. So it just must be a bitter pill when you come to the biggest moment of your career potentially and you miss out.
You've said that, like, given the shambles that the line-out was against England, is it that bit more surprising?
But it's not just, line-outs aren't all about one man. And you know, it's an underthrow or a mistimed jump or it's a bad lift or a mislift. So there's lots of different components to it. So I think we simplify it probably by going Deb's owner, tall guy, throw it into him. If in doubt, get him on. It's just that how well he ran the line out against New Zealand and how much go forward it gave us in that game and how good our launch play was from it. You look back to those positive moments and he's had, you know, he's disappointed rarely in a green jersey in Joe Schmidt's tenure. So we just didn't feel the writing was on the wall, and the first that I'd heard of it was, you know, whispers coming through on Monday morning before the papers had a chance to publish, or before the squad was announced, and I was shocked because there had been no rumblings about that.
How would Schmidt have told him?
I don't know. I presume you know, he you know, talks about how much respect he has for him as a person, so it must have been a very difficult conversation to have. To just say I've opted for this. I suppose my experience of being told, you know, hugely disappointing news is there's no words. You're not going to get them. Actually, I want you to have a rethink. Mm. You know, you've got this one wrong. Go back with your coaches and rethink, and then somehow try and squeeze me into your squad.
You're probably lost for words.
You are. It's done. It's done. Do you know what? You just have to take the news, and you have to. I suppose you have to.
You don't burn bridges either.
No, you have to take it in and try and not say anything that's going to leave a bad taste or words that you can't take back. I think you just accept it and you go, I'm very disappointed, obviously, but, you know, goes on, I'll try and stay fit, and if an opportunity comes, hopefully I'm the next reserve. And I think that's the attitude that he'll have to have. But it's a really tough take at a kind of pivotal moment in his career.
And the Marmion situation, you would argue, was similarly arguable in terms of his selection, that, you know, he was similarly hard done by?
I think definitely as hard done by, because you look at the caps. I think is Marmion 27 or 28 caps under Joe Schmidt. Luke McGrath 13. So he's been a go-to guy. You look back to important games where Ireland beat England a couple of seasons ago with Conor Murray injured. Marmion came in for the All Black game in last November and had a great game. Came in on the wing against Australia for at least 20 minutes and did a brilliant job. He's been on the wing for Ireland in Twickenham. Marmion. Joe talks as well about, you know, how good a guy he is to have around the squad. I knew it was going to be a tight call, but I thought the tight call might go with Marmion because he's been his number two predominantly. That said, you look at the attributes and moments that kind of stay in coaches' minds, and I think first of all Luke McGrath has slightly better pass than Marmion. That's one thing, but I think if in those 50-50 calls, you need moments of brilliance sometimes. And I saw one at the Irish Times wrote about it. You don't have to look back and remember too far. So a huge moment in the game last weekend where Luke McGrath, you know, the work that he did from the blind side of the scrum to get around and deny Wales a try, and huge momentum and potentially back into the game. Like, that's massively important to the whole squad, not just to that moment, to the whole squad, because they're not going to affect Wales score again, lose the game, Ireland confidence dented, you know, they're down and out. It's a nightmare. So that is potentially a huge moment, and it can be those little things can be the difference between getting in and
it's like recency bias as well. That's in your memory and you're kind of like,
well, it's a standout moment. Everyone was watching the game was like, wow, what a tackle.
Yeah,
he'd no right to get there, but he never gave up. So it's, and Luke McGrath is a phenomenal defender. He reads the game brilliantly well. But those two things, and I know there are two aspects of what a scrum half does, but I really, really feel for Ciarán Marmion. I would say as well, you know, talk about the passing. If Ireland are going to throw to the two to the front as they did against Wales, you're going to need your best passers out there, because as an out-halfer and as a centre, looking for ball off the top of two is not where it needs to come from. You've got to get it from four or from the back. You've got to take a few risks if you want to get advantage line and make life a little bit easier for yourself. So if you want to go off the top of two, you need to get Peter Stringer back in there to whip those 30-yard passes out in front of Roger or Johnny and
play off that. The aforementioned, actually, Ronan O'Gara, he was on this morning's Off the Ball AM. He spoke about the selection of Cline. We'll also discuss what Luke Fitzgerald said yesterday, some fairly hardcore comments about it. But here was Ronan O'Gara earlier on Off the Ball AM.
You're obviously very familiar with how Irish rugby works, but you're actually a little bit out of the bubble at the moment. So what's your take on what's happened this week?
Obviously it's been well documented at this stage. I found it strange, really, in the fact that, I think the big, obviously, talking point is the fact that Devin Toner isn't going to the World Cup, but it so happens to be that Sean Cline is one of the four second rows that's gone. But he's been playing for Munster for a number of years now, and it's the same when, CJ's been there, Bundiaki's been there. A lot of these have been well flagged. Do I agree with the fact that it's, is it 3 years?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I don't think that's accurate. From a coaching point of view, I can completely understand it. And these are the rules that World Rugby had made at the time. They've been altered. Probably would have liked to have seen it go to 7 years myself. But the reaction, I suppose, by people nowadays, Ger, you're going to get every possible reaction. So I wouldn't be too fussed by it.
I'd obviously come from a football perspective on this. I find the nationality rule fairly bizarre in rugby, but there are probably extenuating reasons in terms of the structure of rugby. As well as Ronan's comments, Luke Fitzgerald's, I'm not sure these are particularly helpful in terms of the squad, and they might make Cline feel quite bad about the situation. But when he was speaking on the left wing, he was sort of asked about Cline being picked ahead of Toner, and he said regarding the players, 100% they agree with me, but they're not going to say it. That's their job. Would you give up your job? These guys are all going to have to start a career game when they're 32, 33, 34, and we'll have to go right down to the bottom of the food chain, exactly what I'm doing, obviously, in the media. I guarantee you, because I know these guys, people feel the same way about it. Now, it doesn't sit right with people, and that's a fact. Rickard Strout's singing the anthem, that meant nothing to me.
Yeah, listen, Luke, he's been pretty outspoken about it. For me, that's not the issue here. I don't look at it as being the overseas rule being the problem and a perceived foreigner coming in and taking a homegrown player.
Taking our jobs.
Yeah. I don't see that, because we've talked about this ad nauseum where, you know, the rule's been changed. I agreed with Rog initially that 7 years, you know, was probably where it should be at. But then you look at potential situations where
very hard to
kids have to travel with a family and move to another country as a 14 or 15 year old, and you're potentially ready to play for that nation at 20, but you have to wait to 22. They're very unique situations, but there might be some. So five is probably fair. I think you're going to see less project players with a 5 year ruling. But for me, that's not the problem. I understand why people are upset, but I personally don't see that as being the gripe in this. I think that you're looking at someone that's come in that's, for me, has unconvinced at a high level and a high standard in big games versus a guy that's proven and tested and been there and done it.
Notwithstanding the rugby argument about this, is it not putting Cline into a fairly difficult position here where everyone would have done, he's invited to come into World Cup squad, of course he's going to take that invite. And now he sort of feels under unnecessary pressure, more so because Toner's been excluded on rugby grounds. It's nothing to do with him. And I feel a little bit sorry for him in that regard, because he's just he's on the latest in the line of people who've nationalised and played for Ireland.
Yeah, you can look at it a couple of ways. Cline is going to have all his Munster teammates, you know, in the national squad that are delighted to have him there, because, you know, he's soldiers with them week in, week out. But I suppose likewise, the Leinster boys and some of the other international guys that have played and soldiered with Devon for a long time are going to be disappointed at his omission. Mm. But that's the reality of every selection process, that there's some guys are delighted with a new guy picked and some guys disappointed that the old guard is gone. Mm. And I think we can get, I'm a bit conflicted by it because I can understand people's annoyance at, a South African player coming over and 2 days before, his 3 years, or 2 days after his 3 years residency, comes to fruition, he gets capped versus a guy that has been capped most times by Joe Schmidt and in his role as Ireland coach. I can understand people, but for me, that's gone. The World Rugby have tried to put that right. We still have some pain to live over the course of the next 2 years until those 5 years come or pass, and then we can all move on with it.
Let's move on from that now. So Schmidt's position, his stock compared to where it was after New Zealand game, where we've had a poor Six Nations and we've had serious wobbles of late. And a lot of this has happened since it's been announced that the succession plan is obviously taking place. Schmidt he's taken a bit of a gamble in terms of if this Toner thing backfires, obviously, on your head be it, really. Where does Schmidt stand at the moment in terms of where the media is looking at him, where Irish rugby people are looking at him?
I think what's going to be incredibly unfair is that Joe Schmidt's legacy will depend on what happens in this year's Rugby World Cup.
Which is nonsense.
Which is rubbish, really, mm-hmm. because it's been the most successful period in Irish rugby history. If you look, I listed off some of the things that Devon Toner has done. Well, that's all everything that Joe Schmidt has done. Two Six Nations champions, another Grand Slam, series win in Australia, first time since '79, first win in on South African soil, beating the All Blacks twice. He's literally beaten every Tier 1 nation in the last 18 months. But yet, just on the basis of what's happened over the Six Nations, with two very disappointing performances, particularly the Welsh game, and then the performance in Twickenham, and now, sticking his neck out and picking a guy where mightn't be a fan favourite, he's definitely given him, given people a stick to beat him with, potentially, if things don't go to plan. That said, you could have the difference between success and failure here could be a quarterfinal match against South Africa or New Zealand, and it could be a kick at goal for one team or the other, and the difference of it going over, it not going over, is brilliant legacy, terrible legacy because it's another quarterfinal, which is, it's nuts. But that is a margin that you could be looking at, come 6 or 8 weeks' time.
Do you get any sense from his press conference that he's feeling a bit under pressure?
Yeah, a little bit. Mm. Yeah, a little bit, I'm sure. So. You can see it in him.
It's almost like he's aged a bit as well.
He does look as though. Yeah, yeah. Well, someone accused me of posting a picture there yesterday, and did I have that old person face app?
Of yours, Schmidt. It's funny though, you do start, whether it's in your head or not.
And there's a bit of that, things, right? Yeah. So we just, because things, because the pressure is starting to ramp now, we're scrutinising everything, going, oh, yeah, he's definitely, there's an extra few lines or marks, or he looks a bit tired, or, listen, he's had an emotional period as well the last couple of weeks, he obviously had to head home for passing one of his family members, and then travelling back immediately after that, and that's going to take an enormous toll out of everyone. Think about all the moments that he's, the sorrow that you're having to deal with there alone. So I think what annoys me here is that we labour on the negative now. I'm disappointed for Devon. I'm disappointed for Marmion and for the likes of Geordie Murphy and Addison. But there's a time that you have to park it then and then go, right, here we go. This is our squad. Let's think glass half full. Let's think about topping the group and then playing the game of all games against South Africa and New Zealand and getting to a semi-final for the first time. And rather than constantly questioning what's going on, let's try and think, that we're going to be able to deliver some of the performances we've seen over the course of the last year. Because, the lads will read social media and that will ultimately seep into, they'll be told not to, but they will. Yep. And if people start berating them and getting into them about performances, it will have a negative effect. So I think they need an injection of positivity, and we're responsible for it, besides in the media, but you know, the public at home. Now that you've got access into people's lives via their smartphone, you know, you can have an impact, and they are impressionable, and they can have, you can get 100 good texts after a game, but that one nasty one can absolutely wrangle with you.
Our rugby coverage is brought to you by Vodafone Team of Us, everyone in. And before we talk about the Wales game, is there a kind of a situation of Ireland being in a bit of a lose-lose situation in the group in the World Cup, because basically they're expected to go through, it is what it is, we're playing inferior opposition and they're going in under a cloud as well. What do they need to do to kind of, I guess, show the Irish rugby public that things are back on track?
It's more about showing themselves, you know, and I know
so
that
there is a bit of inner doubt. Yeah,
no, well, I don't know. I think the wind was taken out of their sails in the Six Nations a bit, for sure, and lads haven't been able to hit the highs of last year, and it's difficult to maintain the performance level of that All Black game. That was really, that was all, as close to 10 out
that's
of 10
peak,
as you're
going like,
to get. Yeah, so
is there
to
a question
get back
that
there
that
and try and maintain that of a course of a year for a country like Ireland with our player base and everything, and I'm not playing the poor man, but it's a difficult thing to do.
But our opposition basically reading us and kind of just learning to know how to manage Ireland.
Well, what you get is you get more respect and you get more time for teams that would have invested in Ireland. You know, Eddie Jones had 3 months from that All Black game to look at how Ireland were playing and went after them and identify the way and I've created a prototype of sorts of how to beat Ireland and out muscle them, out physical them and just get in their faces and close down their space and get after their 10, all the simple things, you know, it's not rocket science, but they did them brilliantly well. And the concern would be that South Africa, you know, if they are finishing second in their pool and we manage to win ours, that's their game. They don't have an alternative to that game. But if they don't do it well, plan A is if they don't put that into effect well, they just ramp it up for plan B. And that's all they have. But when it's effective, it is very, very difficult to live with. And that's what they won the World Cup in 95 and again in 07. And that's what they'll be fancying to do in 2019 as well.
Yeah, do you think they have a plan B? I mean, Schmidt's spoken about this, how 6 months is a long time in rugby in terms of an evolving game. And I saw some stats today about the time that the ball is actually in play at, you know, the last World Cup versus a few World Cups ago, and it's the ball's in play a lot more nowadays and so on and so forth. But do we have the ability at this stage of the Schmidt era to evolve a little bit, because maybe we do need to?
I think it depends on the personnel as well. I think the ultimate quarterback in Johnny Sexton is vitally important to being able to implement a game plan, but also tweak something if he sees the space opening. And I think one of the disappointing aspects of what we've seen in our phase play in particular is that with the different pod system, the teams have been just slamming the gate closed and there's been no options. Whereas I think if you get Johnny into that pocket, he'll be able to identify cross-field kicks and just has that ability to make decisions a fraction quicker than the guys that have been there previously. We saw it with Joey in the first 50 minutes of the Italy game, how often he went to the kick pass and how much success he had. I think you're going to see a good bit more of that, because teams have identified that if they can really rush and close the outside space, that, you know, Ireland will duck back inside. But I think that's where you have to be brave, not throwing the pass, but going kick pass. And that's why, you know, Ireland are very good in the air as well. So it can potentially be a real strength of theirs going forward.
Where is the out half position a slight elephant in the room at the moment? Where are we with Johnny Sexton?
I don't know. You know, the talk, apparently he's going to play this weekend, but would you risk him if he was a little bit off? I don't think I would, because I know that he can deliver on the day. You know, when he had his 3 month concussion
hiatus,
thank you, we're going back 3 years now, he didn't hit. The first game he played back was France, and he had a near man of the match performance, and it kicked all his goals, looked as though he hadn't, you know, missed a training session for the 3 month period. So he's doing everything at training, and it's such high intensity that you don't always need games if you can simulate training similar to games, particularly for someone like him, and close space and get him thinking in hundredths of a second. Well, you know, he'll be equipped to be able to deal with it, and that experience that he'll have over the last 10 years of being able to know how to physically get himself into a game. I think he's one of the few people that I wouldn't have concerns with. I think there's other guys that you kind of feel need 3-4 games to get into things. Someone like Sean O'Brien always was better after game time. Got, you know, hands got it a bit sharper, whereas Johnny, I've never really thought that of him. I think he's able to hit the ground running.
What did you make of the Wales game? It didn't matter as much. They didn't have anywhere near a full-string team out, but I guess it was an element of confidence restoration anyway.
Yeah, there was. I think it was a good performance. I thought, you know, kind of they really ramped up the intensity for the first 50 or 60 minutes, and I think sometimes things get a little bit disjointed when you have wholesale changes and they wanted to bring other guys in, but there were some real positives. I think, you know, better individual performances. Bundy Aki had a good game, gave great go forward, just looked very confrontational. Obviously the likes of Conway getting in and creating Stockdale back on the score sheet. I think, you know, I've said about him before, he's absolutely electric going forward. He just has to continually work on making good decisions in defence. You know, he flapped for, you know, that crossfield kick in the first half, where if he lets that drop over his head and into the, you know, Wales winger's arms, he's got a perfect line on him to smash him straight into touch. It's only a 2-yard hit. And it's those things that come with time on field and with experience. And defence is the last thing to come to the younger player. And there's no doubt he's going to beat the first player every time he gets the ball. It feels as though with that handoff and the acceleration, the step, that he's going to cause problems. He just has to really focus and make sure he's dialed in on the defensive side of things, because teams will identify that he's a little bit vulnerable there at times, and they'll go after that.
Getting back to the out-half situation with Joey Carberry, he's suggesting he might play on Saturday, but he's kind of, I don't know, I guess he's the player that we haven't spoken about much because of his injury, but what a role he could yet play if things pan out a certain way in the World Cup.
Well, I think it's the versatility of being able to play at 10 and 15. So, he's a great bench player. The knock-on effect of that is that you don't have to carry a 15 to be able to play both. So then you're looking at...
You think he might play in 15 at some stage if needs be?
I absolutely think he might do. I absolutely think he might. And, you know, through injury, but even from a 23 perspective, in those two games, say you're picking your best team in Scotland and Japan, you know, I don't think you're putting, you know, Alarmer on the bench as well as having Joey Carberry on the bench. I think you're looking at one of the centres to come in. So you're looking at a Farrell maybe potentially sitting on the bench along with Joey because he covers that back three, or maybe, you know, Gary Ringrose now able to push out onto the wing. So I think that versatility is great to have in a 23. And I think he will have a big role to play. You know, we've seen Johnny not finishing that many games over the course of the last year, 15 months. So is that going to change? Are they going to want to keep him on? Of course, if the games are tight, but if games are done, you're going to want to get him off and rest him up as much as possible, and you know, keep him for bigger tests.
The Wales game at the Aviva Stadium as well. How you've alluded to players kind of looking at social media and that. How important is it that the crowd kind of gets behind them? It's an emotional day for obviously Schmidt and Rory Best. But how important is it that the crowd is kind of in tune with this team ahead of going to Japan and just saying, you know, we're right behind you, whatever about the difficult year we've had?
I think sometimes the public don't realise the effect that the crowd can have in the game. You see the players talking a huge amount of time post-match interviews about how great the crowd were today, and they really got us going. I don't think that's just them paying lip service to thanks for coming and paying for the tickets to pay our wages. It's genuinely the knock-on effect that has to our confidence, to our every move, to changing the momentum of a game can be enormous and can be the difference sometimes. I remember looking back to the New Zealand game that we didn't win in 2014, but that momentum that we felt from that game was enormous, and we fed off the crowd and the noise of that game. And they are special moments. And you think back to the French game in the Millennium 4 years ago in the group stage where we beat them. Some of the boys were saying that was one of the best atmospheres they've ever played in. And you actually, you totally revel in that. That's where you get excited and you play better as a result of feeding off that.
Yeah, it's your adrenaline
and,
as well.
And so it is important for the crowd, but it's also important for the players to give them something to play with very early on and give them a reason to get into the game. And that's why, you know, a big shot or a big carry or something special from someone in the first 5 or 10 minutes really can inspire the crowd to get into the game.
What are you expecting?
I don't know. It's going to be, you know, you're going to see two pretty much first 15s, I think. You know, the talk is, I think, that, you know, that some of the coaches sometimes have a word with one another in advance of World Cup games to make sure that they're not pitting their best team against their, you know, their second string, to because results and are still important. You know, even whatever happened in Twickenham, we can't legislate for that. But we're going to see two best teams because now it's a fortnight before before the first game for both sides, and a perfect opportunity to rest up any niggles that you might get from it, but give you the game time needed to make sure you're match sharp. So I think it'll be a great game. We've a pretty good record against Wales in the Aviva, but they're coming as Grand Slam champions, and they'll want to make sure that they get their accuracy right, which deserted them back in Cardiff in March. So I think it'll be a tight one, and I hope that they can continue with the momentum of last weekend and bring a little bit of confidence into that Japanese or that Scottish game.
I suppose, finally, what Irish players are most kind of under some duress to perform on Saturday at the moment?
I think, depending on what selection happens, you know, it's you would expect you know, Rory Best to get a start again, because, you know, he came off the bench and did well against Wales. But, you know, again, 50 or 60 minutes and just get some confidence back from his darts, and to be brave and throw to the middle and the back against a good line-out. There's no point in playing timidly and you know, hoping that you can ease your way into the game. You've got to be brave and try and inspire confidence through that. So I think, obviously, a big performance for him. There's a couple of guys that have been quiet by their standards. Ty Furlong has been quiet, even though, you know, he was destructive in the scrum last weekend, but he's been quiet in his play around the park. So a big performance from him. Peter O'Mahony, you know, again, not the Pete that we saw, you know, a couple of years ago in advance of being on the Lions tour and captaining that first test match. So a couple of guys need to ramp up, and I'll be interested to see what that selection is going to look like, because guys like Jack Conan have to be knocking on the door for a number 8 star. Conor Murray needs to get back into the game. So
we didn't even mention him, yeah.
I think, do you know what, because we're not talking about, you know, players' games post New Zealand, we're talking about more recent times, which have not been as effective. Everyone can improve a little bit, and they're, you know, guys that will get an opportunity in this game will feel as though they're up for selection. They've got a great chance against Scotland, but if they don't perform, there'll be others snapping at their heels. So yeah, I'm excited about it, and I'm looking forward to hopefully a good performance.
Thanks for coming in.
Cheers.
With just 2 weeks ago to the big kickoff in Japan, we caught up with Keith Wood about who he contacted during some of the more special moments in his international rugby career, all as part of Ireland's Call. Here is a quick teaser.
In those days, there were no mobile phones, and it was a difficulty to sit down. It's easier now, more instantaneous, more immediate. But the idea of calling back to talk about getting picked on the Lions, you know, or getting picked for any of the other games, or just to have a conversation, just to touch base at home, was essential. You know, you get caught into a bubble when you're playing international rugby. It's great, and you're in a lovely hotel, and all the food and everything is perfect and everything's ready for you, but you need to get outside that bubble every now and then, and the call home was the thing that was essential.
Yeah, go to offtheball.com for the full interview with Keith, and our rugby coverage, as ever, is brought to you by Vodafone, team of us. Thanks for listening.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off The Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.